From Springfield, this is State Week, a program of analysis and commentary on the events that made news this past week in Illinois state government and politics.
Inaugurations are an important opportunity to turn the page, to a fresh start, and to find common ground on the important issues facing Illinois.
4 long years of character assassination, 4 long years of personal vilification, 4 long years of strident negotiating positions, also known as my way or the highway.
The task ahead may take time and seem daunting. Some things will come to you easily, some things not. I implore you to embrace this historic moment with the best that you can offer our state.
The people back home have no tolerance for impasse and infighting. They want us to get things done. They want us to make Illinois better, and together that's exactly what we're going to do. So welcome to the 101st General Assembly. Welcome to a new year, a new start, and a brand new Illinois.
Republicans, given the people of Illinois, Republicans won't win unless we're moderate in many ways and in many things. And I certainly consider myself a moderate on many things. That said, if you're going to be a moderate and to win elections, but you're not going to be a reformer and fix the problems, what's the point of winning? In a lot of ways, the Republican Party for decades was sort of a weak subsidiary of the Democratic Party.
Governor Bruce Rauner giving his final State House news conference. His days numbered as the state's governor, as he will turn the reins over to J.B. Pritzker on Monday. Also, some changes, as a lot of new lawmakers were sworn into the General Assembly this week, yet no change among the top 4 leaders. They all remain the same. There is a new House Majority Leader, and a longtime lawmaker in the House announced this week he's calling it quits. We'll talk about all of that and more on State Week. In Springfield, I'm Sean Crawford, and I'm joined by Charlie Wheeler, Director of the Public Affairs Reporting Program at the University of Illinois Springfield. Also, Brian Mackey, Illinois Public Radio State House Editor, and Daisy Contreras, the IPR State House Reporter. And our guest this week is Tina Svendelis of the Chicago Sun-Times. And Tina, good to have you on once again.
Thank you.
Well, Daisy, I'm going to turn to you first because you were in the House at the House inaugural this week taking place. The House and Senate both had ceremonies to swear in the new members. Quite a few new faces there.
Yeah, and I believe there were 15 new senators and 32 new state representatives. Democrats have veto-proof majority in both chambers. And if the math is correct, about 36% of lawmakers in this General Assembly are women. The breakdown is 20 women in the Senate and 44 women in the House. And as you said, Sean, Michael Madigan was reelected to the post of Speaker of the House, and I was there during this vote, a job he's held all but 2 years since 1983. So only one Democrat, Representative Anna Stavemurry from Naperville, voted present, which she said she would do. She says she believes the Speaker has not done a good job of dealing with harassment allegations in the State House, but that she would work with him and others during her term. So back to Madigan. When he took the podium after the vote, he did the unusual thing of starting off complaining about Governor Bruce Rauner. As we recall, Rauner spent the last 4 years campaigning against Madigan. This was very obvious during these past elections. Rauner tried to paint Madigan as the evil of all evils in Illinois government. And at some point, Rauner was pushing for an investigation into what he called Madigan's wrongdoings. And Madigan took these campaigns very personally, as we heard from his speech. And then just the following day, in a radio interview over at News Radio WJPF, Rauner said he took pride in Madigan's criticism. He said he didn't mind being Madigan's enemy and that Madigan had done more damage to the people of Illinois than anybody. So these two powerful Illinois politicians still can't see eye to eye.
Well, were you surprised, Charlie, that Madigan came out in that tone in this speech? That's not usually what you hear in this type of celebratory type of ceremony.
Yeah, it's not like Madigan to show emotion. But on the other hand, as he pointed out, he had 4 years of vilification from Bruce Rauner, accusing him of just about all kinds of wrongdoing. He's the one who's responsible for every problem that Illinois has. And I think it finally got to Madigan. And probably Madigan could have just kept his mouth shut on that score and just quietly reflected, yeah, Bruce, you lost by 15 points. I picked up 7 seats in the House. So even if your ideas are good, the people don't like you as a person.
If this would have been the NFL, they would have had a taunting rule, I think, after that, yeah. thrown at you.
And as I said, Madigan's usually pretty he's more like Mr. Spock than he is Captain Kirk in terms of his emotional behavior. But I think it was a fair criticism. I think Rauner misplayed his hand badly, as I've said many times before. He could have gotten a lot done had he been able to understand how the legislative process works and to accept the fact that he is the governor, but that's not the same as being, for example, President Putin.
Well, let me go back about a year or so ago when the Me Too movement was starting to develop across the country. We're hearing more about it, and we were certainly seeing situations develop in the Illinois State House and in the Illinois House and in the Illinois Democratic Party as well. And Brian and Tina, let me both have you weigh in on this, but there seemed to be a point there where you begin to wonder if Speaker Madigan, if his days were numbered in that role. There was a lot of criticism happening, and yet here this week, all but this one new lawmaker voted in favor of him, a lot of glowing praise from Democrats. It seems as though he's still standing.
I think the timing of it, if it being last year, the Me Too allegations coming out and affecting his top deputy and his chief of staff and all that, was actually favorable to him since it was an election year. And I think he did a really good job at hiding last year. So we're seeing this like jovial Madigan this past week, but we hadn't seen him in a long time. Brian, I believe you and I were both maybe there when he was elected chairman again of the Democratic Party, and he did an interview and he talked about what it was like to have millions of dollars spent against him to vilify him. And we saw a little bit of emotion there. Other than that, we didn't see him very much. We had statements and we had immediate resignations of people that had allegations against them. So I think there was a good strategy there for him to try to kind of hide it out and ride it out. And I think he succeeded.
And I would also add that, you know, I think it's an interesting contrast because we saw in Washington, D.C., another sort of symbol of the old guard in House Speaker Nancy Pelosi having to really work her roll call and her members to get the support she needed to be speaker. And she had to agree to a self-imposed term limit on that position, whereas Speaker Madigan did not have to make those compromises with his members. And I think that something that people often don't fully grasp, who, you know, don't follow this stuff closely, is that he is not the sort of all-powerful Wizard of Oz that he likes to, you know, have be the image of himself. He is responsive to his members. It was his members who sort of pushed him into ending the budget impasse and dragged him along with that. And we heard this week State Representative Greg Harris talk to about, you know, going to the speaker and wanting to pursue making same-sex marriage legal in Illinois. So he is responsive to where his party's going. It's not, he's more subtle about it. What is that expression about, you know, let me see where the people are going so I can lead them? He's not, you know, rushing to the front of the parade, but he just sort of quietly works his way around, and then there's a puff of smoke and suddenly he's leading them. So he is not quite as autocratic as in terms of the broad membership of the House Democratic Caucus, as I think people think. That said, he can be very individually dictatorial and vindictive. And we, you know, saw State Representative Scott Drury, who exited this week, lost his committee assignments after he voted against Speaker Madigan. It'll be interesting to see. Daisy mentioned that just one legislator, Ann Stava Murray, new representative from Naperville, who has also said she's running for the U.S. Senate, so she is basically term limiting herself if she follows through on that to one term. But she has said that if she is sort of retaliated against, that she's going to view that as a form of bullying and harassment and will be seeking to file complaints about that.
And Charlie, before we move on, we've got other things to talk about as well, but you've covered Michael Madigan for many years, more than I want to say here on this program.
just to go ahead and say it, since 1970.
Well, just let me just ask you, is there, you know, do we truly get what he's about? I mean, I wonder sometimes, because I think he is portrayed somehow by the media and certainly by Republicans and others that don't care for him in certain ways, yet he continues to build these majorities and have this pretty loyal support among his membership. So whatever he's doing, at least to keep power there, it seems to be working.
Well, from watching him for a long time and having a lot of, back when I was an active reporter and back when he was doing this, having a lot of lengthy conversations with him about all kinds of stuff, his main concern is electing Democrats to the House. And his interests aren't along the lines of political philosophy, conservative, liberal, any of that. His interests are to protect the city of Chicago and its institutions, for example, the office of the mayor, Chicago Public Schools, against those people that he sees as threats, and also to protect the integrity of the General Assembly against the other branches of government, particularly whenever the executive starts to overreach. So if any philosophy, that would be what it is. And he's been pretty consistent in that. And I think he doesn't really have to coerce his members because he rarely asks a member to vote against what's good for them in their district. He's had the luxury of having large enough majorities that he can say to Representative Crawford, this would be a bad vote for you back home, so vote no. And he's allowed Chicago representatives to vote the interests of their neighborhood, even when it would be contrary to what he himself wanted. So he's not at all autocratic in that sense. And he looks out for his members. And I think that's one of the reasons why he's able to have maintained his position of power. Plus, he works hard. You know, he reads the bills. He studies the stuff. He has a very low opinion of legislators and other public officials who don't take it seriously. He's referred to in the past people who are out partying every night. He's doesn't care for that. He's has sort of a monastic demeanor in that sense.
Well, Michael Madigan, as I said, getting another term as Speaker, John Cullerton, the Senate President, and of course the two Republican leaders also getting new terms in those positions, Jim Durkin in the House, Bill Brady in the Senate. Now, those are the four legislative leaders. Oftentimes, the public may not be aware of some of the other leadership positions and some key ones that are involved in making the General Assembly work. And, Brian, one of them this week, there was some turnover. Barbara Flynn Curry, no longer a House member, longtime majority leader in the House. Greg Harris is taking over that role. Tell us about him.
Yeah, he has been a state legislator since late 2006. He's one of a handful of openly gay state legislators, and Speaker Madigan made note of that in his announcement of this appointment. The majority leader is basically the speaker's right-hand person. I say person because, as you said, Barbara Flynn Curry had been in that role for more than 20 years now. Now it's Greg Harris. It's the the top Democrat in the House who is not the Speaker of the House. And so Harris has a long track record in a lot of intense policy arenas. He was a lead negotiator on some major changes to the Medicaid program a few years ago. He was the lead House Democratic budget negotiator during the impasse. And he also was the person who helped shepherd the same-sex marriage legalization through the Illinois House.
So that position, it's an important position, and it's one a lot of people had coveted because a lot of folks had been waiting maybe for the day that Barbara Flynn Curry decided to hang it up and move along. And one of those people that a lot of folks thought really had a shot at that role was Lou Lang. He'd been there a long time. He's a longtime Democrat from Skokie. He announced, a little bit surprisingly this week, that he is no longer going to be in the legislature. He's resigned. And Tina, you covered this. What was behind this decision and what else is going on as far as finding a replacement for him?
Well, we talked about a little bit of the speaker's Me Too problems last year, and Lou Lang was one of those problems. There were some allegations against him. They were later found. They were unfounded by the legislative inspector general, the temporary one. So he was cleared, but he was stripped of his leadership post. So we kind of anticipated that he wouldn't want to just be a state rep after so many years as a leader. So we kind of anticipated that he might make a move to the private world. And I believe it was Monday that he announced he was going to a Republican lobbying firm. And that's going to be probably happening a lot in Illinois in terms of Republican companies seeking Democrats to try to do business since we have a Democratic supermajority. But the interesting part on Monday was a lot of rumblings that Lou, I asked him if I could call him Lou because I'm uncomfortable with titles, so he's not a leader anymore. Lou, there was rumblings that he would be appointing his daughter, Becky, She works in social media for the Secretary of State's office. She is an actress. I believe she went to Northwestern. She has some political history. She was a volunteer for Hillary Clinton's presidential campaign. And the problem there is that people in Illinois don't really like when family members are appointed. And we know there's a long, long, long history of it, especially in Cook County and Chicago. And Lou will be getting the weighted vote to name his replacement. It is also Alderman O'Connor. And I'm forgetting the second one, Brian. And do you remember who the second person is?
No, blanking at it.
There's three. Sorry about that. So Alderman O'Connor and Lou Lang and one other person will be naming his replacement. And he asked people to submit applications. And when I asked him about these rumblings about his daughter, he did not deny it. He said if she lives in the district, she's welcome to apply. And also Becky did not really deny it. She just said that she said today, and this was Monday, that she was focusing on the accomplishments of her dad as he stepped down from the House. So we don't really have any answers on that. There's been editorials written about, please don't do this, because people in Illinois are fed up of seeing family members or cousins or whatever, business associates, take on these roles. And we're going to see a little bit more of this, not necessarily a family member, but in naming Christian Mitchell's replacement. And he's resigning today on Friday to become the deputy governor next week. So there will be another situation in which I believe Alderman Brendan Riley of Chicago will be getting the weighted vote to name his replacement.
And I would just say that this is par for the course. This is the way the system is set up in Illinois, but it for people who leave office mid-term. And it stands in contrast to the way Barbara Flynn Curry, the majority leader we were just talking about, left office. She announced before the primary, before the filing period, that she was not going to seek re-election so that there was a truly open primary process. And I remember standing in line. There were, I think, I don't know, eight different people, a fair number of different people who were trying to get her seat, and they had to stand for election. They had to go before the voters in the primary and in the general election and win it fair and square and not go through this sort of, the metaphorical smoke-filled room, although they're not filled with smoke since we have a smoking ban now, but you get the idea.
Well, right. I'm remembering the senator, by the way. It's former Senator Ira Silverstein, who actually resigned, or actually lost, after a Me Too allegation came out that was also slightly unfounded. They found some problems with allegation, but he lost his election. So he's still a Democratic committeeman. So he is still playing a role in naming Lang's replacement.
And just going back to Lou Lang, also worth a mention is that he's long worked on marijuana and gambling legislation. Expanding sports betting was his latest project. So it will be interesting to see if any of his assignments or clients, now that he's a lobbyist, will be within those categories to move it forward. And this kind of brings up the question of the revolving door, you know, having people in government going straight into lobbying for those issues that they worked so hard on.
Yeah, the revolving door spins quite a bit sometimes. Daisy, we'll talk more about J.B. Pritzker next week, because he's going to be the governor for quite a while, for 4 years at least. And we'll have plenty of chance to talk about him. But this really may be our last time to really discuss Bruce Rauner for a few moments. He held a news conference, his last State House news conference, in which he laid out what he felt were some accomplishments of his. He also talked about some other things. You were there, Daisy. What was your overall view of that?
Well, he had a few tips for Republicans moving forward. He said that he believes that the Republican Party needs to be moderate on some issues, just like he was, in order to win Illinois. But in order to, you know, continue winning, they need to move on reform, not just kind of leave things hanging after winning. He did say that, you know, still one of his biggest accomplishments was Janice versus Ask Me, saying that, you know, restoring free speech in organizations and governments, not having people, non-union members paying fees, mandated fees. That's something that he worked really hard on during his term, which made him kind of like the enemy of a lot of unions, and as we saw. And Charlie can
public
definitely
enemy
weigh in on that.
Public
yeah.
enemy number one, mm-hmm. I think, Charlie.
Yeah, as you've already alluded to, yeah, I'm thoroughly a union guy. I'm a lifetime member of the Chicago Newspaper Guild. My father helped organize it at the old Chicago Sun-Times years and years ago. And I would look at the Janus decision as being a black mark on the governor's history. Now, that's a difference of opinion. He's entitled to his opinion. I'm entitled to mine. But that aside, if you look at it from a pragmatic matter, if you realize that to get anything done, you need 30 votes in the Senate, 60 in the House. I'm coming in as the governor. I have this tremendous anti-union agenda. I want right to work. I want public employee unions to be abolished. But I also have to deal with the fact that there's not 30 and 60 who agree with me. So I have to do it incrementally. Instead of saying we're going to have right to work, maybe we'll change collective bargaining for public schools. We'll kind of nibble away at it, kind of like we did with Chicago Teachers Union. They don't have as much bargaining power as teachers unions in the suburbs and downstate. And maybe with prevailing wage, maybe we won't try and abolish it altogether. Maybe we'll say, well, on some of these small dollar projects, you can go ahead and maybe hire non-union contractors at cheaper rates. And doing that, you might have gotten somewhere. And instead, with this broad-based attack on unions, he managed to bring together the public employee unions and the trade unions, who weren't necessarily on the same page. But he managed to bring them together, and that kind of tubed the rest of his program.
You know, go ahead.
And I don't want to sort of. I'm not going to express an opinion one way. Whatever you think of the Janus decision, I think that his credit claiming for it should be interrogated a little bit, because there were a number of state court cases that were sort of teed up. There was one out of California a couple of years ago that probably would have been decided the same way, but for the death of Justice Scalia, which caused the Supreme Court to deadlock 4-4 in that opinion. And so they had to wait for the next case in the pipeline that the sort of national conservative libertarian legal network has of these cases. And so it just so happened that Janus and the Illinois case was the next one up. Browner tried to get involved in that case earlier on, but was tossed out by the courts. So, I mean, it's sort of a win that he can claim, but I think it happened in spite of him.
Well, and looking at it in that light, you could say that Mitch McConnell, the U.S. Senate Republican leader, deserves more credit because he stalled on filling that vacancy. He would not allow the U.S. Senate to consider President Obama's nominee for the Supreme Court. They held it over until Trump got in and was able to put in a hard conservative.
You know, I look at Bruce Browner and I think to myself, he came in and I think people elected him in some cases as maybe a fixer, a guy from the outside, not beholden to so many interests in government that, you know, he's a businessman. He's going to deal with the state's finances. That didn't happen. It was almost as though fuel was poured on the fire. I think that led to a lot of people who dislike what they saw of Bruce Browner as well. But Tina, I do want to give you just a minute or so to kind of give your kind of closing thoughts on Bruce Browner as well.
Sure. So I was actually cleaning the Springfield office today in the Capitol. I'm sorry, yesterday. And I noticed a Blagojevich press release that said top 100 accomplishments of 2004. And I thought we would never see that with Bruce Browner. I mean, we saw kind of top 10 of last year, that sort of thing. And that's kind of one of the biggest criticisms of his tenure is that he didn't accomplish much. And he would fight that. And he would say that he helped get the education funding bill, which a lot of people would disagree with that. He credited, you know, him fighting against the budget as just a way to emphasize the need for reforms in the state. So people say that he didn't really take his wins as much as he could, the small wins. He's even admitted that himself. But I think at the end of the day, I think people will definitely look at his view on unions, and they'll also kind of sum up whether he accomplished a lot in the last 4 years.
Brian,
one of the ironies is, in my mind, probably the greatest accomplishments that he had were in the area of criminal justice reform and the fact that our prison population has dropped dramatically because of reforms that were enacted under Governor Rauner. Now, a lot of it was bipartisan effort by Democrats in the legislature along with the governor, and in my mind, that's how the system is supposed to work.
Brian, I want to take the last couple of minutes here to talk about a couple of things that the legislature did this week. The lame duck legislature, we might want to call it, before the new swearing-in took place. They did pass some legislation. One of those in particular, of course, was one of getting a lot of attention in the Chicago area as it basically cleared out the tollway board and all the members on that. Another one would increase salaries for some state officials. Talk about that.
Yeah, this was something that Governor Rauner had talked about as well. And Governor-elect Pritzker says that in order to attract the top talent, Illinois salaries have just not kept pace with comparable sized states. And so his people were circulating figures of what the California Department of Corrections director makes and what the New York State head of the transportation department there makes. And it is all anywhere from $40,000 to $100,000, give or take, more than what those positions were earning in Illinois, because, not surprisingly, it has not been popular to raise the salaries of public officials in Illinois for a long time. And so what this legislation does is raises those salaries by 15% over where they are now. Now, it's a statement. I find it somewhat hard to believe that, you know, somebody deciding to whether or not to be the director of corrections in Illinois would be, you know, made or broke on the, you know, few thousand dollar difference. But Pritzker says this is what he needs to sort of help him attract talent. And it is his first win, if you want to call it that, in the General Assembly.
And of course, Tina, there's also some rumblings going on that there may be some other ways to get money to some people that he feels are deserving of higher salaries.
Yeah, I found it to be surprising, and I think some of these people who have gotten this money are also surprised. They reportedly did not know that what their salary would be in December, some of these people. And today we're learning that J.B. Pritzker set up an LLC to double their salaries. So a lot of people in the former administration are kind of really upset or wondering how this happened. But this is perhaps just a sign of what it's going to be like to have a billionaire governor who broke records during the campaign. But what we're seeing here is that he is going to be paying 20 positions double. So the state salary, plus he's doubling it with his own money. So that includes his chief of staff, Ann Caprera, his three deputy governors, Stan Hines, Christian Mitchell, and Jesse Ruiz. And we were kind of wondering about that when he named them in December. How are you going to pay three deputy governors? I believe we had two during Rauner's administration, and they were paid around $130,000. So these will be getting so much money. Caprera will be getting the state salary of $148,000, which will be doubled to $298,000. Which is so much money, and the deputy governors will be making $278,000, with $139,000 of that coming from Pritzker's own pockets. There's also communications staff, deputy chiefs of staff. It's 20 total, and the line that I thought funny in this was that some have not been filled. So I'm wondering if people are just kicking themselves for maybe not applying for jobs for this administration.
Right. Well, time now. We got time for one note from the field. Daisy?
Yeah. Former State Representative Nick Sauer was charged with 12 felonies for allegedly posting private sexual photos of two people online without their consent. He was a first-term Republican from Lake Barrington who resigned in August last year as a result of the allegations made by a former girlfriend.
Okay, that will do it for our show this week. We'll have a new governor when we sit down next time. Members for the broadcast today include Charlie Wheeler, Brian Mackey, Daisy Contreras, and Tina Svendelis with the Chicago Sun-Times. Get a podcast of our show at nprillinois.org and also find us at NPR One. Just look for State Week. The production assistance for the program today provided by Bob Meyer. I'm Sean Crawford.
You've been listening to State Week, a program of commentary and analysis of events in Illinois state politics and government. State Week is produced in the state capital by public radio station NPR Illinois. This is IPR, Illinois Public Radio.